Blog Talk Radio.
Greetings, Hotep. Welcome to the Curator Reroom. You've got your Omega 7 in the house, live coming to you straight from my living room. I am your emperor, and I am here to serve you, whatever you like. I am your advisor, the one you need, and the advocate, the one you want. Welcome to the Curator Reroom as we embark upon a second day of our new topic, Reparation, Give Us Free. This day's topic will be focused on looking at a couple of books, ladies and gentlemen. I don't know if you've heard of, that there's a couple of books we're going to be featuring. One of them is Little Dirty Secrets by Dr. Claude Anderson, as well as looking at the wealth of African Americans and examining their wealth. And Dr. Anderson also has a book pertaining to Reaganomics, dealing with the wealth of African Americans. And we're going to be talking about some of the information in his books. And this gentleman has gone out to many of the ministers and conducted workshops pertaining to his book. His whole concept, if we don't get wealth during this particular decade, then we're possibly going to become permanent underclass. And he wants us to be aware of it, so he's written books to talk about how we can implement programs that will allow us to look at reparation, at least sit down and have a conversation and have a forum. And he's addressed it throughout some of the ministers' services, and there is a ministers' group that has actually gotten together to sponsor him, a philanthropist group, so that the churches are informed about looking at reparation and also looking at terrorism in the United States. Where does it come from? So he has been busy going from church to church to conduct these workshops. However, he has created a couple of packages of media. He has media on videotape, CDs, and tapes, and his lectures are available as well. We're in the process of waiting to get a response back from his office in reference to him being featured to talk more directly with him about the question and answers of this whole thing called reparation. It's a big word, but let's break it down. Slow down and say it with me so we can get a better understanding what we're talking about. We're not talking about the Civil Rights Act. We're not talking about the 13th Amendment. We're not talking about the 14th Amendment. We're not talking about the 15th Amendment. However, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to take you back to school, and we're going to go back to the Civil Rights Act, and we're going to talk about that Civil Rights Act, and we're going to talk about exactly what happened when the congressman pushed for the Civil Rights Act. Was Lincoln for it? Did Lincoln encourage the Civil Rights Act? Or was he against it? And was Lincoln for the reparation that we apparently there was a discussion between three congressmen, and they were pushing for a Civil Rights Act to go forward. Because they were Republican, they were very, very radical in their nature, from what I understand, Thaddeus, and there was Somer and Belgum. These three congressmen were instrumental in pushing forward to have this civil rights action to be pushed into a bill. However, it was rejected two times because it had ambiguous language in the actual law where it talked about all of them, you all. It never specified freeing the slaves. It never said African-American, so it became ambiguous, and it caused people to literally violate what action was put in place. So in 1862, they could not even enforce this civil rights law. However, this civil rights law was being looked at to see if they could get wealth in the hands of the slave. It wasn't necessarily being looked at to give this group of people a civil rights law, but we're going to get into that more, and we're going to break some things down, and we're going to break bread. And for those of you who are out in the listening audience, I'd like to invite you into the room with questions and answers. I'm going to throw some questions out there, and I want to see if you can call in with some of those answers. I want to give you a couple of things that you can go look up while we're taking our station identification, and hopefully you can get back to me and let me know if you can elaborate on that. Now, let me see here. Now, there was the act in 1865, which read, they had to redistribute some of the wealth for the blacks. They had to redistribute this wealth for the black. That was the real reason why they created this Civil Rights Act in 1865. However, it was denied. The bill was killed. Does anybody know what year the bill was killed in for the Civil Rights Act? Okay. And what happened? Did they reintroduce this act? Now, remember now, this was during the time that Johnson was in office. When they sent the bill to Johnson, what did he do with the bill? Did he approve the bill? Did he veto it? Question, what did he do? And what was his opinion about blacks? Did he want to push for the Civil War to free the blacks? Excuse me, did he want to approve this particular Civil Rights Act? Now, we have to remember Andrew was the president. He became the president right after Lincoln. Abraham Lincoln, I have to tell you this, ladies and gentlemen, he was not our great emancipator proclamation person, as if we want to believe. His whole concept, according to the literature and based on Dr. Anderson's research, indicated that he no more wanted us to be free from the Civil War. He only wanted to load us back on boats and deport us back to Africa. He did not want to keep us here. Lo and behold, during the time Abraham Lincoln transitioned and was killed, then you had Andrew to come in. Andrew had a different concept of what reparation was. See, during the time that Lincoln was in office, there was these three congressmen that were constantly fighting for the rights. They were Republicans, but they also had black mistresses, and they wanted their children to be taken care of. So they were pushing for the rights for African America during this time. However, that civil rights law was vetoed. Once again, they tried again the second time, okay, after the bill was killed. They reinactivated the bill. This time they were a little bit more, had better tone to what they were saying, and resubmitted it the second time. This is the Civil Rights Act that came back around 1866, okay? And during this time, when it came back in 1863, was when the North was still losing the war, and they were upset. Now, mind you now, this was a whole scheme that Lincoln created to put a scare tactic on the Southerners to make them afraid that they were going to lose their help in the kitchen, their help outside, guarding the facilities, working the field hand. They thought they were going to lose all the support. See, the Caucasian man went out to fight the war and left the black man to take care of his home and his family and to govern his society and the state. The Northerners felt that this was an advantage that the Southerners had because they could then fight the war without worry about the cumbersome day-to-day problems of the home life. So they put out word, which was a falsehood, of course, that the slaves were going to be free and that, you know, this was going to hurt the Southerners. But they also told the Southerners, look, if we have to ship those Africans back over to their homeland, and if you should miss out on having their labor, we're going to compensate you. And one of the first states that was compensated was Washington, D.C. And this is all in Dr. Anderson's book. One of the first states that was compensated was Washington, D.C. It was known for being the capital world of slave ownership all over the world. They were compensated. And according to Dr. Anderson, for every one slave they had to release and let go, or they lost, they received $300 for it. And they were the first to get reparation for releasing their slaves or giving up their slaves. They did not want to. The Civil War was not fought so that they could free the slaves. It was fought to redistribution the economy and economic wealth that was coming into society. You notice that every time the North would overtake a country, well, actually the Northerners were losing, but every time the Southerners would overtake a country that belonged to the Northerners, they wanted to take that land and do what to it? A couple of the congressmen thought, oh, let's redistribution this land and give it to the African-American by giving them their 40 acres and a mule. And guess what, ladies and gentlemen? Those congressmen got together, and they did decide on a strip of land that started with South Carolina in Charleston, I think, all the way to Jacksonville, Florida, and some of the Johns Island, the Admiral Island, the islands that were out there, they also gave them those. So this was all a ploy. However, when the Africans did hear about it, they possessed their land. But quickly did the government go out and move them off their land. But these people were ready to fight for this land. They had finally got their 40 acres, but not the mule or the $100. However, because they were playing this game with the Southerners, they never had intended to free the slaves. Now, when they finally went and told them that that the president was creating an Emancipation Proclamation and that they were going to free them, and during this time it was in January, which was very, very cold, according to Dr. Anderson, Americans would not receive the fact that they had been emancipated and freed. The first law that got on the book was in 1866, which finally got through. It didn't get vetoed. It was approved. It was the first law that was created to redistribution of the wealth. Now, in the meantime, the Emancipation Proclamation came back around again, and this time when they brought it back around, they introduced it in January, but the Africans refused to adhere to it. They didn't get the message until June that year, and that's finally when they start recognizing that this emancipation was there. Now, this is what you have to understand. They gave the concept that they could actually free those people who had broke away in the Civil War and who were no longer in the Union but broke away. The government no way had the power to free those slaves at all because they had broken away and they were not a part of the Union, but he decreed that he could free those slaves, okay? Now, however, the ones that he couldn't free, he gave the impression that he could, which were the people based on the union. So in essence, nobody got freed. And the emancipation never freed anyone, according to Dr. Anderson. It never freed anyone. The laws that were left on the book also came back during the emancipation when they did the 13th and 14th Amendment. They went back to the 13th Amendment and said, they wrote the 13th Amendment and said, you could not enslave anyone involuntarily to have servitude, except for they have to have been duly convicted of a crime. This is when the black codes came out and the black laws, and they used the black laws to discriminate against those various different Africans. Now, mind you, the Freedmen Law was in effect. And during this time when these so-called blacks were getting freedom, they had to have a way to manage their affairs. They had no income coming in. They had no money. So the Freedmen Law was designed to go out and get these people to get connected under a contract stating that they would work the land. And all these contracts were just bounding them to things that they could not fulfill. So this freedman, all under the assumption that it was going to give welfare and support, but yet it was forcing them into contracts that they had no business being in. In the meantime, no one was actually free. The 13th Amendment came back to free the people. That's what opened up the fact that they had their freedom. However, they could incarcerate them at any time if they were found walking the road without a contract being assigned where they're working for a white man. And they could be picked up for looking out the same window that other Caucasians were looking out of. They could also be cited and convicted and sent to jail for playing games with white folks. These were all the black codes that were coming out with new laws to convict these slaves when they couldn't hold them into slavery, only if they were duly convicted of a crime. So it's just a way of flipping it around, putting them back into slavery again. These were called shampoo programs, Dr. Anderson talks about, where they take the poo out and leave all the shampoo, leave all the sham. And then every time they indicate that they're going to help the slaves, they end up hurting them instead of helping them. Now, mind you now, Abraham Lincoln he no more wanted to free the slaves than the Ku Klux Klan. And at the same time, you must remember that Anderson, during this time of presidency, he looked at the blacks and said, let their ends make meat. In so many words, we're not going to help the blacks anymore. They never got reparation. The land that they had proposably set up was land that was set up in a scam just to call a coup to get the South to be frightened and then throw them off task so they could lose the war. Now, over 60% of the business was done through slave trade. 60%. So if white males that had ownership of slaves gave up their slaves, they would be losing a grave amount of money in giving up the slaves. So they wanted to be compensated, and they were. They got the first reparation, starting with the state of Washington, D.C., like I indicated. We're going to be back, ladies and gentlemen. We're going to get back into it, and I'm going to take station identification because, you know, it is the faith that gives us ability to be able to come on the station. And we'll be right back at you in the atmosphere, ladies and gentlemen. We still have a program. I want to say hello to our listening audience out here. Hello? Hello? You're in the atmosphere. You're in the Care to Read room. Can I help you?
Speaking on this, I don't know who you are. You talking to me?
Hello, you just called into the Care to Read room. Who am I speaking with?
Yeah, it's Brother Hockey. How you doing?
Okay, I didn't hear you. Can you repeat your name?
See, this is Bobby Bianchi. How are you doing?
Bobby Bianchi?
Bianchi.
Okay, how are you this evening? Is there a question that I can answer for you?
Yeah, on the issue of reparations, and I think your question was, is when or why have black people gotten reparations? Well, one of the, I would say is that the powers that they have, they haven't leveraged those powers in order to leverage them against, you know, the powers to be in order to receive reparations. For instance, you know, we vote blindly for the Democratic Party without putting demands or issues on the table. And, you know, a lot of times we find ourselves putting a lot of emphasis on the emotional ramifications of slavery rather than citing the tangible monetary and economic loss that was either lost by and denied to the slaves and the unjust riches that was gained by those who profit from it. You know,
absolutely.
The U.S. government profited quite a lot from the tax that they had on raw cotton. And at one point in this country, cotton was 75% of the economy, especially in the southern states.
Absolutely.
Then you look at the head tax that was imposed on every slave that was brought into the country. And the Catholic Church received a head tax of about $25 per head. So those tangibles are something that need to be, you know, audited, and it should be a issue that goes up. Then the final case, blacks don't want to be included. At least they say they're not. You know, say, I think there should be a line drawn amongst people who call themselves, you know, blacks and slave descent. There's a difference between black and African American. I'm sure you're well aware of that. There has to be a line drawn somewhere, because this further amalgamation is basically watering down the true substance of those who are descendants of slaves. Would be beholden to the settle the debt those considered as descendants of slaves, and in many cases can pretty outright, you know, show that. So I just wanted to say that.
Well, thank you so much. I definitely concur with you. I was wondering, did you know that that there was 98% direct slavery and about 2% indirect slavery? And when you look at everything, it's about 100% all of black folks that were enslaved. And then around, you know, 1860, then, you know, we began to look at what our nation's wealth was as a black people, and we had about 1% nation wealth. We had about a half a percent nation wealth during the 1860s, and then even 140 years later, we still, you know, we call ourselves 100% free, and at 140 years later, we only have a half of the nation's 1% wealth. So what has happened? Have we regressed, or what's the problem? Yet now we claim we're free and we don't need reparation. We're still worse off than we were before we talked about the concept of reparation. So we really have to go back and look at the fact the Native Americans, when they did their treaty, they were cognizant of the fact that they needed to be sovereign. They needed a sovereign nation. And when they asked for a nation that excluded them out of the black laws, it also gave them ability to have a government system of their own. Now, they were constantly explaining that blacks should look at the Chinese structure of their plan. However, we would benefit better from the Native Americans plan, because the sovereign nation would give us a chance to create our own government system. And if we had three radical congressmen fighting just so we can get the civil rights law inactivated. And this civil rights law, the first time they put it together in 1863, they vetoed it. It kept it out as a bill, and it wasn't until the second time around, which was about 1866, that they finally got it approved, and it was a law just to look at how to distribute the wealth between the African-American and, you know, the Caucasians and other Caucasians. It was just to look at it, but, you know, here a president, Anderson, gave us the appearance that he could actually free slaves that were no longer Union. These slaves had disassociated themselves with the Union, so the government had no control of them, but they gave us the impression that they could free them and that they had the power to free them when they really didn't. And then they came back, and those that they could free, they didn't free. So what it was that we keep failing to look at, this particular war was fought on redistributing the wealth, and the Northerners wanted the wealth distributed to them so they could bring their immigrants in. I don't know if you know that during this particular time, the immigrants were standing waiting to be indoctrinated as being on probation to become white. 90%, I understand, of the Hispanics were already approved to become white. So they gave up their citizenship to become white, so they had privileges that we didn't have, because now you got the Hispanics approved for being white, and then you have the other Asian people on probation for being white, and then you got the blacks that you don't know what to do with, but you need them for two reasons: for labor and consumers. We were consuming such a large population of the clothing wear. Every year they knew they were going to get two outfits in the winter and the summer, so they could depend on the government paying for all of their consumable items. So they were disposable. They were indispensable because they needed them for consumption. Then they needed them for labor, because when they decided to say, okay, we're going to allow you to go out, work the fields, and if you work the fields, after you pay us what we are due, then if you make a profit, then you can earn your keep. And all the time that they worked this land for the Caucasian, they never, ever earned a profit. They were always in the hole. So that was a scam that they created. So here you have these people who could have very well been 6% of the business producing their own cotton, selling it back to the Caucasian, but they did not want to do business with the African-American. They didn't want to give them any power to do business with them. Then they could have set African-Americans back in a state of giving them wealth again. But these congressmen were saying if the blacks, African-Americans, didn't get wealth, they would become permanent underclass. And here today, we're still permanent underclass. That's what black people got to look at.
Those Republicans passed those silly laws in the stage of the history of this country. And the ones that was denying the civil rights in 1964 was Democrats, who was staging those filibusters and so forth. There's no black first under Democrats before 1964, if a person would look at it. And one can they have discussions on the reason of the Civil War. But the Civil War, you know, the Northerners sold slaves, sold the property to the Southerners. Then when they began to industrialize, they wanted to take that property away from them because the efficiency of machinery, no matter how efficient they were, they could not overcome the efficiency of free labor. And the competition between the markets of the North and the markets of the South, that free labor was very difficult to get. So when they came to the idea was about free and
but did you hear?
So
but you hear, did you hear what I said when, I don't know if I quoted you the Emancipation Proclamation and that 13th Amendment? See, the 13th Amendment was created out of the fact that they didn't have a bona fide Emancipation Proclamation, so they had to create the Civil Rights Law. So in essence, you had a group of people that was never emancipated and still to this day are not emancipated, because if you have a law that says I can create black codes, you are definitely, you cannot enslave people in a contract where they says, okay, people, okay, but they never said slaves or blacks. So here you got a group of white men in power who own slaves. They'll say, we're not abiding by that law because it's ambiguous statement. You are not being specific about specific Africans or slaves. You're saying them and all them. So in the language, it became ambiguous. So they did not have to adhere to the 13th Amendment either. And then they said, well, let's add this other clause on unless they are indubitably convicted of a crime. So that's when they came in with this whole slew of new laws to make every African a criminal. And when they could make you a criminal, you could easily be put back into slavery. Nobody was acknowledging this law.
Right. That was because, you know, the 13th Amendment ended the practice of slavery.
Right.
But the slaves themselves still didn't have any right.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, the slaves themselves didn't have any right. And that was demonstrated in the Dred Scott case where Justice Taney said that
right.
a black man has
absolutely
has any rights that a white man is bound to respect. So what came then, what was brought about then was the 14th Amendment, which was supposed to had nullified any black codes, anything, but except for one thing with the 14th Amendment. The 14th Amendment was forced upon Africans because they couldn't vote. You know, in order for the 14th Amendment to be come into effect, they had to be ratified by each, and for it to ratify, citizens of this would have to vote for the ratification each day.
Right.
But these did not have the right to vote. So they could have said, yes, I want to see this 14th Amendment put into a way whatever meaning.
Mm-hmm.
So in essence, the 14th Amendment was forced upon them. And all it did was basically said, from the point that this law is in effect, this amendment in effect, anyone that's born in the United States is a citizen of the state.
Mm-hmm.
How about people who already lived at the day before the 14th Amendment was put into amendment?
Uh-huh.
And those children had children that was already children, you know. So basically, it's really lousy, you know. You
right.
being
and,
imposed
and, you know,
upon
if,
something
if we,
that you really had no chance to.
Well, see, don't you think? See, in my opinion. Our African Americans need to be affluent and on the mark, because here we got a congressman who worked in law. We could appeal to his best interest by saying we need to revamp those three laws and we need to have them rewritten and to address them sensibly and not play trickery games like they did with those laws, because in essence, blacks got nothing out of those three amendments, 13th, 14th Amendment. They got nothing. The hunchback, the Jews, and everybody else ascertained something but blacks. Now, we may have got a few set-asides, but we didn't get a whole lot. And, see, the first reparation law was written by Claude Anderson, and that civil rights plan was written so that it could be laid out as a form of reparation. But nobody has really presented a plan to the government as to what would we be looking for if they are to decide to give us reparation. Now, what I had proposed was when you become a sovereign nation like any Native American, then you could literally attach yourself on to the mission that the Native Americans are working with currently now. And it wouldn't be anything in the world that any government system could do about it if you can prove that you dutifully have a certain percent of Indian or Native American blood in you anyway. So that's
yeah, but the only thing is, on a sovereign nation, the Constitution permits no recognizing of a sovereign nation other than the Native American, which is in Article 1. For any new sovereign nations bring up, you know, they would be.
Well, no, I'm not saying bring up. I'm saying go with those existing ones who have existing nations now. I'm willing to bet that a large percent of us have a have 8% of blood in our body that is Native American, and in some tribes can prove that they're eligible for any types of set aside
yeah.
that they've already
but
given.
You see what's going on with them, though, don't you? You know, you have black Indians who are trying to, the Native, the Indians have, the white Indians have disowned the black ones, especially when it comes down with the sharing of gaming revenue.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you got your Cherokee, your Seminoles, your Chuckow, the those tribes that began with the Lower Sea hidden on slaves, and there are blood ties with it. They have since then, and this argument is still going on, that they're not Indian enough in order to receive, you know, fees from the gaming revenue. Now, when they're complaining against the Bureau of the Interface, the Bureau of Interface, it's out of hand, you have to go tribe. Tribes already spoke. So it's just another one of those things. And see, a lot of those tribes have been amalgamated. They have, whites have gotten into those tribes. You got,
oh, yeah. I read about that. Mm-hmm.
So
That's a way to infiltrate them, to nullify them. So there, something needs to definitely be done about that. Now, can you pronounce your name again for me?
Yes, Pianki, P-I-A-N-K-I.
Now, Pianki, I have a list here that I want to read to the listening audience, and it might intrigue you a little bit. I'm not sure how I got it in my hand. It's the history of reparation payment, and it starts with the USA in 1990 paying the Japanese. And I like the quote here from this document. From the USA in 1990, they paid $1.2 billion, or $20,000 each, to the Japanese. And in 1990, the Australians were paid $25 million, and the Holocaust survivors, the Jewish Claim Conference on Australia. Now, let me stop here on this, listening audience, because I want you to know one thing when it comes to talking about the Jewish claims. There were black Jews, over in Germany. There were actually Africans that came into Germany that were recruited to be a part of the military. And they were like indentured servants, and they were there before Hitler started this big killing spree. The first to be killed were these Africans in the Holocaust. There is nowhere printed and written down that you can find that information. However, the Germans there in Germany will tell you about this event and that it happened. So in essence, those descendants of those black Africans who were in Germany are entitled to the Holocaust reparation as well. Now, this is how God is working this thing. When they're talking about these people are entitled, then what about the Africans who were indentured servants and who actually were actual recruits to work in the army in Germany? Now, that needs to really be looked into by any descendants. And I'd like to go on. 1998, in Canada, 260 million square miles of acres of land was given to the Indians and the Eskimo. In 1986, USA gave away 32 million in 1836 in a treaty for the Ottawa of Michigan. 1985, USA gave 31 million to the Chippewas of Wisconsin Native Americans. 1985, USA gave 12,347 and 500 million to the Seminole Indians of Florida. In 1985, the USA gave 105 million to the Sioux South Dakota Indians. In 1980, USA gave 81 million to the Klamaths of Oregon. 1971, USA gave 1 million plus 44 million acres of land to Alaska Native Land Settlement. And in 1952, Germany received 822 million, the Germans and the Jews settlement. Now, isn't this quite interesting how the Japanese, who were not even in this country at one time, were able to ascertain these funds? I mean, don't you find it kind of strange?
Well, let me. Am I?
Go ahead.
You know, another thing too is that the Jews have gotten it where the victim of the Holocaust, if he or she is still living, their descendants, their heirs, and even their benefactors. Now, you know what a benefactor is. A benefactor is if you assign something that you have due coming to you to someone else in case that you are not around to receive it. They don't even have to be related to you. Any Holocaust payments that they receive from any place, they have to pay either state tax, sure, federal tax. In a lot of states, they have to pay, like Michigan, for instance, the former governor, Inc., and I'll be pronouncing his name, he built the Michigan State Legislature, which would exempt Jews from paying any taxes on Holocaust benefits at the state level. And Bernie Frank, I think, championed a bill at the federal level that exempts them from paying any federal taxes on Holocaust. Of course, that didn't happen on U.S. soil.
And that's what our black people don't realize, is that you're being set back because of not income, but because of wealth. Wealth and income is two separate things. And Dr. Anderson went on to describe and break that down for most of the ministers in the churches, how wealth is different, how it's your excess after you've paid all your bills, whereas your income is the money that you pay your bills with. And we never have excess, and that's the problem. That's why we're not building up wealth. And you have these African Americans who might have these mid-level positions, or they basically are in corporate America, and they're saying they can't see the benefit of it. However, those middle-class blacks have to see the benefit of it, because any time you can have your taxes forgiven in reparation, not any monetary actually handed out to any one particular African-American group, but to reduce taxes, to forgive them of certain debts that they've been paying out, and to also give land, could pretty well bring us out of this recession. Because right now, if we are 1%, if we are 0.5% of that 1% of the nation's wealth, and we are keeping this country on top, and if you gave jobs and gave income levels of wealth to African America, you can jumpstart the economy for the whole world.
Well, you know, I'm against when people say that blacks, those who receive reparations, don't deserve any monetary, any monetary rewards. You know, blacks deserve, those who that want cash deserve cash. It's like they the Chinese cash. No one told them. I never Jews that we don't need cash. We need cash on song. If you, that they want cash, they should. They need all of it. More. And
we all need cash. But if we're going to do something systematically, you can't have people in there. You know how people become about money? They become confrontational, and it's uncontrollable. So it's going to have to be done in a diplomatic way. And that's why I said that you don't necessarily have to pass cash out, but it could be equivalent to cash in your bank account. Because you know how a large amount of us would do, we take that money and just give it right back. But if it's given in a form so that you can't ever sell the land away and the land is always yours, then you're going to have a place to rest your head. But I'm saying whatever manner they do this in, surely we want to look at, number one, I think, was there any psychological trauma in the Middle Passage? And do we indubitably need to have any type of behavior modification to help us to work on that post-traumatic stress syndrome? Is there funds available to give psychiatrists to help take us back through a rites of passage so that we can come out of this post-traumatic stress? That would be a number one thing I could see them doing immediately, not with the Caucasian psychologists and hypnotists, but somebody that's more sensitive to the needs, because surely there is some side effects going on from that post-traumatic stress syndrome. And you got psychiatrists now looking at that and what damages has it done to families, what damages has it done to individuals, and can we not go forward because we're stuck in that door of no return because we are still suffering from some of these major psychological problems from post-traumatic stress syndrome. Now you got men who were never diagnosed with schizophrenic. It was a female, white female condition, and back in the 80s, and now the number one person who's being diagnosed with schizophrenic is a black male. And the disease didn't even exist. It was a disease that was created by the Caucasian working class who wanted their women to be maintained. So how did the African-American get this diagnosis put on them and being a male? Is it a forest or what? I mean, well, are they suffering from something? They just give it another name. Huh?
Many ways that we can receive reparations. As I said before, you look at the Jewish family that moved to Dalton, Alabama, they received $50,000 to relocate. To relocate Dalton, Alabama, $50,000. Those moved to where they was had to remove those homes there on the West Bank. They get paid for relocating there. It's you have certain countries, like Israel, for instance, and Jordan, on many of the products that they manufacture and import into the United States, there's no duty or tariffs charged on them. Well, black businesses should be set up, whereas they can set up manufacturing production in West African countries and have the same ability to ship goods back into the U.S. Your Walmarts, your Macy's, your big department stores should allocate shelf space for those goods to be on the shelves would be sold. So there's
now, let me ask you a question. Have you ever remember reading about the immigrants and what exactly that imposed on the African American when about 1865 to about 1880 the immigrants came into our land? And there was a big effort to push them in during that time. I forget what they called that. It was some type of fair they had.
Well, came in under the most of free labor.
Yes. And when they were bringing them in during that time, see, they were busy giving them land. They gave away so many billion acres of land. They gave away, I think, 1 billion acre of land. And they also gave the railroad, like, 3 miles square to the right, 3 miles square to the left, and they gave all this land to the railroads, but they didn't have the heart to give any of that land to the African Americans. And I'm just curious as to can they go back and look at that, and how much better would they have been off if they owned land, if African Americans had gotten some of that land. And because these immigrants came in and they became citizens, and in my opinion, we fell below. We've fallen below the level of a refugee. We're not even at the level of a refugee because those people who don't have children can't receive AFTC. They're at the level of a refugee. When I lived in Germany for 5 years, at least those young people coming right out of school, they're guaranteed up until their 25th birthday to have a roof over their head and to have access to going into any technical school they want to. And they are surviving. But then they bring refugees in from Africa who are in a refugee camp. Then you got these so-called blacks here in the United States who can't even receive welfare. So we've fallen lower than a refugee, if you ask me.
Well,
and yet people
Katrina,
are saying don't talk about reparations.
Yeah, during Katrina, when those people coming out of Louisiana and some of the other states were labeled refugees, Jesse Jackson and maybe a few others went up in arms over that. But actually being labeled a refugee would have probably been one of the better things that could have been
bestowed
upon them.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And when you're in foreign countries, that's the best thing that could be bestowed upon you, the title of a refugee, meaning somebody's going to take care of you. You're entitled to some entitlement. And maybe if they don't want to give us refugee, maybe we may as well start saying, well, we're your new refugees. Put us on a camp and take care of us. But see, you're going to have these dignified
black
men saying they don't want it.
See, black, you said, and those who understand it, they're going to have to come and draw a line and avoid yourself, blacks in America. And that's what I see, because one of the questions, you know, you keep throwing the excuse out there, blacks won't come together. Well, it's not going to come together on that. It's not beneficial to do it. So somewhere along the line, people are going to have to come to the realization, say, this is what I am, this is what I want, and this is the direction we're going to go. And that group is going to be easier to deal with than trying to bring in 99.9%, which is never going to happen.
Absolutely, absolutely. Well, there are a couple of organizations besides Harvest Institute who are working feverishly on individual cases as well as on the group class action plans. And I did a sermon, I guess I call it a sermon, to the young people to get worded up and really, really become conscious, because I met a lot of young people who were paralegals who, by virtue of them handling pro se, became their own independent paralegal, where cases were being designed and researched and interrogatories answered. So I did a whole segment on talking to the young people about learning how to do the paper trail and how to complete the forms as a pro se candidate, and going online and taking advantage of all these services where you can have your own download legal service and you can learn how to defend yourself. And when you go into these courtrooms, you won't have to be at the mercy of the court where they assign you adjudicator who's somebody telling you to take the plea bargain. So I did a whole sermon on young people understanding that criminal law never gets you in the courtroom. But if you become a lawyer, and most of that could be paid for, then you can literally handle cases and set up agencies that work for the deprived people and help them in law. So when I did that because now we're looking at this 14th Amendment that said that you can't put blacks back in slavery unless they're indubitably convicted of a crime. And therein lies our black boys and black men are getting put back into slavery up under the black laws and black codes that still exist. So if we can break down what were those black codes, do they still exist now, and are they operating those laws under some other name on the African-American male? And if so, can we not get the NAACP to say, look, we want every male that's not working to come and take a six-month program on street law? It should be mandatory after-school program, Saturday program, just like the Jewish have. Because if they don't know these laws, ignorance is no excuse of the law.
Yeah, NAACP is not going to do that, because look where they get their funding from.
Mm-hmm.
That's going to have to come out of black people themselves, those that want to do this. It's a miracle that this issue is continuing to be. I know one gentleman don't pay income taxes. He argued slave cause in the United States Constitution and also the 14th Amendment. And, you know, he's still out of jail. He's still not having any taxes taken out of his, his wages at all.
Now, how did...
So,
okay. He need to be in somebody's law school. No taxes taken out of wages.
You know, it depends on what you argue. Now, like Wesley Snipes, he argued a case that white folks usually argue, even though the case had legitimacy, but it's very difficult to find a jury understand what the hell you're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
He should have been arguing the slavery cause, but, you know, somebody in his capacity is very difficult to take on a position not paying any taxes. But the normal black person, you know, could argue the slave clause. But
absolutely,
you know,
absolutely.
They don't, you know, do it.
And if we and see, no, see no. A whole lot of us could be involved in some things. I did used to take cases for NAACP, and I helped them with a lot of cases. And I really thought they were there for African American until I found out when I needed them, they were not there. And I realized that pro se program they had was not really suited for the black African-American because they needed somebody to give them basic instructions on how to complete forms. And every church probably should have something there to offer a webinar or a seminar teaching them about the forms, because you get so many young people have a clue what how the court system is set up and the judicial system is set up. And you've got other people, you've got people telling us that, well, why would we need reparation? And you know, I mean, the people that are existing now were not the ones that participated in slavery. I said they may have not participated in slavery, but they sure as heck benefited from the offsprings of the income that came from their lineage and their heritage.
This government still exists. This government, as I mentioned before, profited off of slavery. You profit off raw cotton, which was a tax that was imposed on the production of raw cotton, and the cotton was produced by slaves. You profit off the tariff that was imposed on imported property in the form of head taxes. You have the Catholic Church that profited. And there needs to be other research that's done to show how these government bodies actually profited off of slavery. The emotional, and oh, that was horrible, and this was wrong. That's not gonna fly in a court. You have to show damages, and those damages were, you know, the inability of you to obtain wealth. Based on, you know, your labor and, you know, other things.
And I think somehow if we could get the psychologists to come together to show causes for punitive damages, they could document so many different tests and exams that could be put in the records to show that there's definitely damage physically and mentally that can be accounted for and compensated for. And there is, I think there's one doctor who's looking at that. She's lecturing on the aftermath, the post-traumatic stress. I did a study on black African-American male and looking at some of the overdiagnosis of special needs, ADHD, and how basically a large portion of those kids were inappropriately diagnosed and placed in wrong classrooms. And I definitely think that some kind of way we can start the process of the ball rolling by doing research and putting various different groups together to research aspect of damages and, you know, have a plan ready so that when something does happen and does come back on the table as a bill, we are ready. And everybody keeps it so quiet, they may have one or two groups working on it, but for all intents and purposes, there could be a number of different churches assigned and groups assigned to look at different aspects. Because when you go into the courtroom, there's so much that you have to prove. And because this has never been tried before, you're going to have a team of lawyers to research all these different areas. And, you know, the long-term effect that it had on women during childbirth. How many of those children who are considered as disabled children who have to go into special ed classrooms, like, you know how the alcohol syndrome thing, that, you know, who knows, a large portion of them could have been traumatized. So a lot of that can be proved, but you definitely have to substantiate it, document it, so when the time comes, it is filed away and documents can be produced. Because when you do lay a claim, you have to definitely make sure that the medical records line up, you know.
That's right. That is totally right. So the subject is still out there. It received some drawbacks on the last lawsuit that was put out there against the railroad companies. There's also some corporations and insurance companies. You judge. I mean, it's a disdain about the issue of reparations with blacks. You know, even Congress made the apology. They said this apology does not open the door for reparation. But see, the thing is that black people, you know, the people who fall under this particular subject, they need to start using what way. And one thing is that is this expectation of them to vote a particular way every general election, and also on your in-between election. The Democratic Party, then they need to change your causes. And I think that even that may be too, because now black voters, you know, Obama, the Democrats only black vote in 5 states, you know, to live. And Stan, especially during that midterm, states like Ohio, and one of those has totally went Republican, to an even a greater degree. So the election of Clinton was 9 years ago when he was talking about the deadline that coming fast on how long blacks would have before they actually would be irrelevant. I think that date may have came and already gone.
Now, what was that date again? You said the date for what?
Well, you know, when Claude Anderson gets, you know, when he was there, he was talking about that time, it's coming real fast when these immigrants are just going to come in and clean your clock. And that's exactly what's happened.
Yeah.
I think blacks are irrelevant, not only, especially on voting. Black women have aborted any babies since Roe versus 1973 to 2005, 8 million plus. That's a rate of about 1,400 a day. Black children that have been eliminated from everything. Your children are being used as a commodity, not only public schools, they're being used as a commodity for the prison system. You're being used as a commodity in your everyday life. I mean, you're racially profiled, you're ticketed in traffic courts, that's a tax that you're paying. You're stopped and made to pay a tax as you go through sobriety and safety checkpoints, which are exuberant in your community. So just to survive in your own neighborhood, you have to pay a tax beyond what other people in other areas are paying.
And see, don't forget that all this reparation money that has been sent out and land, African Americans are still paying they're paying the price for that as well. Yet we're not even a recipient of any of those funds. So, yes, it is something that the government system needs to be looked at. And average African American families are not legitimate and economic where they have discussions like this about sitting down and including other family members into cross-examining and having a forum, because you got people that say, oh, I never did so good in social studies, so why not? Why not try to learn about social studies and economic now and current events so that you can better justify when you're trying to I used to go into court to do mediation, and I worked with the school system, and our court system there is another whole system altogether. However, you see cases being slung all over the judicial and the Supreme Court because you've got these mothers who don't know their rights, and their special ed kids are being they're being Title 21, means they're expelled for the whole year, and then they sit there all year and they have to pay for a lawyer to get their child back in school. So I used to take their cases, and I did get a lawyer to work with me because, you know, I'm not a member of the bar, so that lawyer went in to do these cases with me. However, in the due process hearing, you can still do due process hearing. So I carried due process hearing cases and had to go through the full-blown trial, cross-examining the whole bit. And so as I saw these young people, starting with these young people in the institution of special ed, most of these kids were slotted to go right into the penal institution. And a lot of these teachers who left the public school went to work at these various different institutions for incarceration. And they said it was a track record, a trail right into the prison institution for these special ed kids. So it's a lot that's going on to funnel business in the institutions to even get the children ready from day one when they're diagnosed with a special needs condition. So you've got a lot that needs to be looked at.
Yeah, there's a lot that needs to be looked at, but depending on the these governments do is not never happened. It hasn't happened in a lifetime. And I haven't seen no improvement. And, you know, we're here in the St. Louis area. We haven't seen any improvement whatsoever in that area where blacks stayed in North St. Louis.
Mm-hmm.
And historically, we can back. And in my opinion, it's one thing to read history, but it's another thing to experience it and see it
mm-hmm.
with your own eyes. And I don't know where you live, but in the city is where blacks live. You cannot show any appreciable improvement at all. Blacks
mm-hmm.
recognize what improvement. I don't think they understand what improvement is or what a project is. You know, progress can clean and pave and clean it. In the United States, progress is talking about your monetary wealth gain. And you know, you mentioned earlier about blacks who are in certain positions. Even statistics show that they only earn 3/5 of whites do in that same position. It's even set up because, for instance, a grade that you receive as A has a range between 9. And whites are always going to consider themselves as better, even if you get an A, because of that 10-point range. They say, well, you score lower than we score in a higher 9. So still should be able to, what it says only people with A's can have. Understand what I'm
mm-hmm.
Even if it was a B, or B is from 80 to 90, well, they're going to say, well, generally blacks score in the lower 80 percentile, whereas
mm-hmm.
whites score in the higher 80 percentile. Therefore, whites are entitled to more, you know, than blacks are. So
you have to also look at, they use that same thing when they're getting ready to write you up a policy for insurance. So they've really gone across the tracks because they're discriminating against you on the applications that they ask you, have you ever been convicted of a crime? And then for the average black that says yes, they discriminate, so they never get a chance to get in for an interview. But some of the stuff that they're putting on the application by virtue of, you know, sometimes black people can look white to them based on their GPA, their credit score, and a whole lot of other stuff, and they'll bring you in thinking you're white. And they'll sit down and say, boy, I thought you were white. And I had somebody tell me that once before. I said, why? It was like, you're great.
Yeah, I've had
them
say that to me, too. I was in Detroit when I went on. I was working in commercial construction. And we on strike here in my city. I was up there working. And I got on the, I needed to stay because I was staying in a hotel. But I had this there for about 3 months. It's like a newspaper and a rooming house that had a room for rent. And I talked to a woman on the phone and talking for a while. She said, oh, sure, come on over. We got them here. Then when I get a knock on the door, open the door and see I'm black, oh, then I said, you know, then I realized, well, I said, lady, don't you know it's against the law of discrimination? She said, yes, but please, just please go away. So,
yeah, there's a lot of that going on. Seriously, for graduating college recipients who are coming out of college, they can get they can hire an agency to really prep their bios and get their vita looking really good, and they'll walk in there thinking they get ready to interview a Caucasian or Asian person, and then when a black walks in and got all the dots and all the places and T's crossed, I mean, they're just beside themselves, and they'll say, well, you know, I just didn't anticipate this. And some of them say, oh, I'm getting 2 for 1. And those are the ones who are hilarious about it, because now they get 2 for 1 for a black woman and a female. That's 2 for 1. But I was really shocked to hear Dr. Anderson say that 99% of the Hispanics that come here in this country, they do a trade-off to become white, and they literally are treated like white. And however, you know, to be on a waiting list to become white means you literally are counted with the Caucasians number, so we're going to be the underclass all the time if everybody else is on the waiting list to become white. So I don't know exactly what that means, but I found out on the reservation that some of the Native Americans are not pure Native American. They are mostly interracial white. And I don't know what happened that they started doing a lot of interracial marriages, but they used to tell the Native Americans that we would allow you to become white if you would integrate and marry somebody in the white race. And then, as you were just telling me about them going out on the reservation, creating all this havoc, I'm just wondering, was that a good sell-off for them to get involved in that, knowing that these people are creating havoc in their camps now?
Well, yeah, that's where it goes. When I used to work on jobs, and I studied in the job at lunchtime, I was the only black in there listening to the males talk. They used to make these jokes about say you should eat them all.
What was the joke about? Say that again.
They said we should eat them. F all white. And of course, you know what I mean by F. And that's the come of it. You know, you mulattoize and you mulattoize and you mulattoize, and sooner or later, you want to make the father. The same thing that was going on. Well, that was one reason. That was the same thing that started creating the black colleges, because senators have a relationship with these black women producing these mulatto children. And their children couldn't go to school with whites, and they didn't go with blacks, so they couldn't get the so-called black colleges for their children to go to.
Now let me ask you a question. What do you think Obama should do in the rim or in the light of reparation? What do you think he should do, and what are some of the steps he should take to address this this issue that needs to be addressed?
I don't think Obama on his own is going to do anything. He's going to have to take black folks. See, Obama, we're not using Obama the way we should, at least attempting to. See, we shouldn't expect for Obama to come with an agenda. We should have our own agenda.
Mm-hmm.
And we should have been had those agendas prepared and taken them to him, just like other groups are doing.
Mm-hmm.
They go to them, you know, Arab business people sit down and say, this is what we want to do. And that's what he's supposed to make come into fruition. Obama agreed with the Armenians on their claim for genocide for an act that happened against Turkey back in the early 1900s, when the word genocide hadn't even been coined. And they want that to happen so that they can get reparations from Turkey.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, Obama, the only problem, that's politics, like DeMint, Dennis DeMint, I think his name is, he said that he agreed to reparations black, and maybe one or two other do. But you got to get people in a position where they have to, or they need you. And you acting out in a predetermined manner over and over and over again, I don't necessarily need you. You know that you need by doing it that way.
Mm-hmm.
And that comes down with both. I mean, they can depend for, you know, 10 years ago, black vote, I hope. But now, you got this increased population with the Hispanics. They make a noise. You get increase in population with other immigrants. They're making, you know, Asians, and even parent ourselves, anyway, it should be Asians be the one, because Asians have the highest household income, 25% more than white. And they increase
well, see,
in numbers.
See, Asians are on probation to become white too. Nobody wants to be a Negro or black, so they're selling out their heritage to become white because they're going to get benefits to go with it. So you really don't have a minority class,
They already using their furniture better than we do.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Claude Anderson talked about that, but in essence, they do use that, especially with import and export, with the especially import. When you go to the classes that's held on trade, they're full of Asians. When you go to these classes that's held on clothing design, they're full of Asians. Asians have taken 40% of the textile market in lower Manhattan. They took them from the Jews.
Mm-hmm.
So Asians are very, very strong here in the United States.
Oh, yeah. Well, see, their literacy rate is about 90-some percent. They're very literate.
Well, yeah, especially when it comes down to business.
Mm-hmm.
Which is more important. You ever read the book called Tribes by Jewel Copeland?
You know, I heard about that book. Give me some insights about it, because I think I remember someone telling me about it, and they did an overview. Give me some insights, some highlights.
The subtitle is How Race, Religion, and Ethnicity Equate to Success. And it talks about the different ethnic states.
Did you say Jewel Copeland?
Yeah, Jewel Copeland, K-O-L-A-N, he's the author.
Is she the lecturer who
it's
talks a lot about melanin and melanin research?
No, it's a
It's a him?
Jewish Arthur. Yeah.
Oh, okay. No,
it's
I'm not
very
that
good book. There were books out there there's several out there. Black Empire by George Shultz. The book was written back in the 1930s.
Mm-hmm.
Like I said before, Tribes. A poem by Bruce Petty called An American Deal. It talks about $7 trillion reparation that the U.S. is prepared to give. And
Are you familiar with Dr. Anderson? Has he come to your hometown to do any seminars?
Yeah, I've been knowing Claude for a long time.
Okay. I'm trying to get him on the show. I just recently talked to someone in his group about him being on the show, so hopefully I can hear something from him soon and find out if he can come on the show to talk about his Dirty Little Secrets, the book that he created.
Claude is right on time. Plans for the Economic Business District in Detroit would have been titled African Town. Came under ridicule from not only blacks, even some that was on the city council there in Detroit, but also the people who was already servicing blacks' consumption needs very well, i.e. the Arabs for one, and Latinos.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Now, did I hear you say that you went to Detroit to do a job there on a committee or something?
That was a long time ago. That was back in the 70s.
Okay, and what company was that you went with to go there and do some work?
Well, I was in commercial steel erection, and I was working for a company. We was working for Bethlehem Steel. It was erecting a building,
mm-hmm.
a building out on Highway 75
mm-hmm.
at that time.
Now, Claude, from what I understand, Claude is going to the churches to do seminars, and I definitely would like him to focus in on the number one Bible Belt here and in this area where I'm at. There's just ministers all over the place, and they won't give another license. They're claiming they won't give another license for another church to be erected. So most of the people they're being consumed by the churches, and if they're not conscious and they're not teaching conscious material, then they just got a lot of black folks who don't know they're black. And I really would like for him to, you know, come to our town to talk a little bit to some of the ministers here.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know, you know, I read some of his platform about what he did in the past, and trying to make them conscious of the fact that, you know, they have to have a conscious awareness. But when you've been told to give up your conscious awareness and don't let color be the main person for integrating, so you've got a black town who've had a black mayor that don't know they're black. Excuse me.
Well, you know, only folks to such issues.
What'd you say?
That's enough to make you cough. Yeah.
Excuse me, sorry about that.
How you feel? That's enough to make you cough.
Yeah, but it really needs to be, the churches really need to take control of some things and be responsible, but they're really not. So I like the fact
only
that Claude was going into the churches.
Only
huh?
a few. Yeah, only a few. Not a very, and you mean to tell me that they have this, your place there, your area there is so saturated with churches that they are refusing to give any more permits for churches?
Well, they said that's the next. I mean, I don't know how true that is, but that's what they said. But it's so saturated with churches that it makes you think when you come into town like this that there's a lot of sin reigning and there's a lot of people who are not conscious.
No, you got a lot of hustlers. That's what you got going on.
Okay, so this is Hustle City then. All right. So
yeah.
I agree with that.
But just think about that. As much as and see, you got these people in the mindset, they don't care what happened on earth, they should get on to the next place. But you and I know about all of that. But you know the thing is that if you know Jeremiah writes and the Ralph Sanders of the go and you know for instance Fred Price to an extent and there's been others, but those preachers understand the economic ramifications and you have the ability to pull to convene. Is to black people and things like a church. There's got to be some economic development that comes out. I ask these people, why do you build these edifices? Why not build a school training center and just have church in the open on Sundays and on Wednesdays? You don't want to build them where it's supposed to be.
That's right. And you know what? I'm going to open up my chat room so that, you know, because sometimes, you know, they put the lights out on me in here and then I can't close out. So I'm going to open up my chat room, okay, and ask you if you would just meet me in the chat room and we can finish this conversation and then I'll just close out, okay?
Okay.
All right, hold on. Ladies and gentlemen, I'd like to thank you for going all the way with Omi today in our discussion about reparation. And there you have it, ladies and gentlemen. We'll be right back on tomorrow. Tomorrow is Saturday, and Omi will be with you Saturday to have a discussion. So that's to make up for those 2 days that I was off on sabbatical. But nevertheless, we're going to have a great day tomorrow, and I'll see you tomorrow, same time, same place, here at 6 o'clock in the Care to Read room. Thank you. Odaba,
and Yoruba means
okay,
goodbye.
I'm sorry. What did you say? I didn't hear you. What did you say?
Odaba and Yoruba means goodbye.
Yes, it's Yoruba means goodbye. Okay, I'll open up the chat room. Maybe you can just go in there, okay?
And what was your room again?
The Care to Read room. Pronounce your name again for me, sir.
My name is Tony.
Yes, can you pronounce your name again for me?
Yes, Bianchi.
Bianchi. We've had
Bianchi.
Spell that for me again, Bianchi.
B-I-N-K-I.
B-I-N-A-I.
P as in prison. P-I-A-N-K-I-N.
Okay. All right, then. We're going to welcome you guys to the chat room. We will have that chat room open, and we're going to try to check out of here this evening. And thank you so much for giving us all that enlightenment. And please do come back and join the Care to Read room and be a friend if you don't mind.
Okay. I'll talk to you later then. Bye.
All right. Thank you. Odabo. We'll see you tomorrow, ladies and gentlemen.